Hello, hello. Good evening, everyone. John and George here coming at you. Welcome to Counterparts show, and we're really excited to have you here today. Today's we're going to be doing a film that is really dear to our hearts because after The Wrath of Khan, our lives pretty much were just jolted into space and we were floating and we had no idea where we were. We were lost. But we are actually going to be covering the film that came out right afterwards, which is, George?
Star Trek, The Search for Spock.
Yes. So we're going to have trivia. We're going to have some news updates. We're going to have some movie talk, obviously. And we're going to have talk about the contest and a lot more coming up on Counterparts. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. All righty. Nice. Nice. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, George. How you doing?
John, right now, I am as happy as a Klingon in a UFC match. Nice. Very, very happy. Excited to be here with all of you guys and excited to have some fun today.
Yeah, we're going to definitely have some fun. I'm really excited about doing some conversations on The Search for Spock, which, you know, is one of those films that when it came out, we were actually, when just the previews came out of it, we were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, what? You know, and then, you know, after you watch the film, then you start realizing that there was that moment where he went to, like, for some reason, I didn't pick that up on Wrath of Khan when he went, remember. I just thought... For him to remember what he actually sacrifices or that, you know, to remember what he did, it didn't occur to me, but it was such a important fact to a Star Trek, The Search for Spock, you know, it was part of the whole thing. So I was very intrigued by that. What were your thoughts on that? Like when it came out, I mean, you were, you know, we were both young, but you were a lot younger than I am. What did you think about that?
I was so excited when I saw it. I mean, I was actually like nervous. That's how excited, because after Star Trek II, when I heard that there was going to be another one, I was like ecstatic, right? So then when I see the trailer, and the reason why I was nervous was because I saw the Enterprise like destroyed, right? And I see all these things that I never really thought I would see in a Star Trek movie. Like I'd never in my wildest dreams ever would have seen the Enterprise actually destroyed. So I was like, holy cow, what did they do to the Enterprise? Oh my God, who's, you know, is somebody gonna die? Is, you know, so I had all these weird thoughts go through my head. And I, you know, when it actually came out, I went to see it twice in the movies. That's how much I loved it.
Yeah, it was so really
exciting.
Good. It was really good. And so we're gonna dive into that as well today. That's our main topic, obviously. But first we're gonna actually just say I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Obviously, if you like what we're doing here and you appreciate it and you're getting any value or entertainment out of this, please make sure you share, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. This is also on our Twitch page as well as some Facebook pages as well. So we're really grateful that everybody's here. We're over 500 right now members and
600.
Climbing. Over 600. Oh, my gosh. We're over 600 members. We're hitting 100 members a week. But that's really awesome. So we're really excited and we're so grateful to everybody. So
yes,
thank you. I guess the next thing, there is a contest that we're holding and we hope people take advantage of it. We are actually giving away these beautiful pins. These are nice pins, by the way. These are pins that you can put on and, you know, your kids would love them if you have children. I would love it myself, but so this is Mirror and Amok Time, which we actually covered these two episodes in previously. So you can check those out if you'd like on our YouTube page. But yeah, all you have to do to join is just send me a message. Say, John, I want to be in the contest, and here's my first name and my last name, and that's it. I'm gonna put your name in an envelope. And then I'm going to put you in a hat, maybe this hat right here, and we'll pull out the winner.
Maybe the contest is too simple.
Maybe.
Maybe it was too complicated. Maybe
send me,
was
too simple. with some kind of a math equation that you solved.
I know I'm not doing that because I haven't solved a math equation since I was,
yeah, since I've I never solved one. So
yeah,
exactly. So that's the contest, and so we're gonna actually go into the trivia section of our show, and then we're gonna do some news, and then we're gonna jump right into the episode, The Search for Spock. So trivia. Now I've not gotten one of these yet. I don't expect to get these. I love Star Trek, but when it comes to a lot of these trivia things, I always get stumped. So George, what do we have for our trivia question?
Well, keeping with the same theme that we're having today, right? So today we have The Search for Spock, which was directed by Leonard Nimoy, which is a Star Trek cast member. So I figured I would stay in that same theme with the trivia question. Why not? Okay. So here's the question. John, what Star Trek cast member holds the record for directing the most episodes?
Star Trek cast member. I mean, I immediately want to say, because I know that William Shatner directed, he's directed, I know he directed Star Trek V, but...
But we're talking episodes.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, there's a trivia question, folks. We will have the answer for you at the end of the show. If you do know it, please send it, type it into the comments there. There are no prizes other than like bragging rights, and you will be king of a space while this episode is on, if you get it right.
Yes. And by the way, just a quick thing here. If any of you guys out there have a trivia question that you want to try to stump me with, feel free while we're on the show, if you're listening live, throw it out at me. And I will try to answer it while we're on the air. Live. I will not Google it.
And be like...
Exactly. Yeah. You won't see. Matter of fact, I'll hold my hands up like this, so no, you know, everybody can see that I'm not Googling anything. And if I do not get it, I will let you know.
Yep.
And you will be the king of space.
Cool. We're both from the Bronx, so we used to doing this a lot.
That's very true.
All right. All right. So now we're gonna get some news. So this is actually gonna be the news segment. So, ladies and gentlemen, hang on tight, because we're going to get some news from George Batista.
Counterpart Star Trek News Update with George Batista. He's my cousin.
I know you know. He didn't see that. I just surprised him with that.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, John.
Are you going to do the news?
Yes, I will do the news. I will do Star Trek news now. So Star Trek news brought to you by no one. Just a quick news update for those who are wondering. Paramount just recently came out with a date for the latest Star Trek movie that's going to be coming out, okay, which is exciting stuff. Now that date is going to be June 9th, 2023. Wow. Now, the reason why that's interesting is because the last few months, or even the last year, there have been a whole bunch of different ideas and proposals for Star Trek movies. Actually, one was supposed to be proposed by Quentin Tarantino.
I heard about
which,
that.
Which would have been extremely interesting, how that would have gone. Is he
a Trek fan?
I don't know if he's a Trek fan or not. I don't remember hearing that he was.
Okay.
But I mean,
he's such a brilliant dude.
Well, right, exactly. But then again, there have been directors like Robert Wise, who did the first movie.
Right.
He hardly knew anything about Star Trek at all.
Well, I mean,
And it kind of showed. But
I mean,
I know he had directed like The Sound of Music or something, but other than that, I mean, he didn't know anything about Star Trek.
Yeah, the singing sequence between Kirk and Spock was just completely.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. But.
Brought me to tears.
Yeah. Imagine like Spock and Kurt, like West Side Story.
Boy, crazy.
But yeah, so Quentin Tarantino's was, we heard that he may do one. And then there was another one by a director named Noah Hawley, those things were in the works, but then they never went anywhere. So One thing we do know with this is that it's going to be produced by J.J. Abrams, who was the one who directed the latest Star Trek films that came out starting in 2009. So that's kind of exciting, but we don't really know much about it. We don't know who's cast in it. We don't know if Chris Pine and, you know, all those characters are going to be on it or whatever. So everything else is a big mystery, but like I said, we have a date, so stay tuned.
Wow. Over 2 years at least.
Yeah.
For that, but it's exciting for the simple fact that I do like that it's still relevant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like thought like, is there going to be one? Of course there's going to be a Star Trek, another one. You know what I mean? It's going to continue. I mean, how many things do we have coming up now that are still, that are new? So it's going to be an awesome thing with Picard and the other one, the animated one.
Lower Decks and stuff like that.
Lower Decks is, and all the other things that are coming out. I think that's really exciting. So, and J.J. Abrams, you know, I know he got a little bit of because he kind of took the timeline, or he kind of shifted things around and created new things. And I know they kind of pissed off a lot of Trek fans and stuff. I personally thought it was great. You know, I love to see those characters. The directing was great. Everything about the film itself was great, you know. So, and just the fact that you keep these characters alive, you know, and you keep them moving, I think that was really awesome too. So, you know, we'll see. I think that's exciting. That's cool news.
It is exciting, because the point is that we thought that Star Trek was dying after Enterprise.
Right.
After Enterprise got canceled. Now it's kind of revived itself to a whole new generation of fans and those types of things. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, there's also Strange New Worlds that's going to be coming out, where it follows Pike.
Captain Pike. Yep.
There's still a lot of interest on Star Trek, and I think that's going to be pretty much consistent through our lives, I feel, because it's influenced so much in just our daily lives, and it's the reason why we're doing this show, right? This is a kind of parts show, everybody. It's we build a bridge between Star Trek and everything else here, and we bring you along on the journey. And today we're going to be talking about The Search for Spock. So I think we're going to dive right in. Thank you, George, for the news. Appreciate it. And we are going to be discussing, and sorry to surprise you there with that opening. And
I thought that was awesome, though. That was cool.
I was going to tell you, and I was like, you know what would be better? That he has no idea. That might be more fun. But yes. But cool. So we're going to be discussing a film that really is dear to our hearts, because it brought Spock back to us after we thought we had lost him in Wrath of Khan. And watching these films again, because we've watched them close to, you know, sometimes you go years without watching these films because you know them so well. But after watching these together, you know, you understand now the journey that they were on, right? They went back to space dock. They were completely beat up from Khan, right? From the big war with Khan and everything. They're entering, you know, there's that scene where they're entering the space dock and you see all the damage on it. And one of the women like looks and is like, of course, you know.
Did you know who that was?
No, who was that?
That was Yeoman Rand.
Ah, okay. That was, so she obviously is not happy with the condition that Kirk brought back the Enterprise. And then to find out that it's not even going to be it's going to be decommissioned,
right?
Basically, you know, they find that out shortly after. So it takes place after that war with Khan, where they defeated Khan. They're kind of crawling back into space dock, and during their travels back, somebody, even though Captain Kirk had sealed off Spock's quarters, somebody broke into the quarters. And he was kind of like, and of course, they already had a skeleton crew to begin with. Plus, they were all really young cadets. And he ends up figuring, you know, what the hell's going on with this? You know, everyone here's lost their mind. What's going on? And sure enough, there's somebody in there. So they go downstairs. The door's been pried open. And Kirk is making his way through. You want to take us for the next few seconds.
Yeah. So basically, Kirk goes down into the doors open. He walks into the room, which is Spock's quarters, which was supposed to be sealed, and he hears Spock's voice. And it's Spock's voice saying, "Jim, help me. You left me on Genesis. Why did you do that? Help me." Right. And, you know, Kirk sees a silhouette of somebody sitting there, and but it's Spock's voice. So right away, you're like, what is going on? So sure enough, he runs, grabs the person, pulls him out, and it ends up being Dr. McCoy, who is actually talking with Spock's voice.
Right.
And he's saying these things. And right now, he thinks McCoy is completely flipped. He's completely lost it.
What's the matter with you?
What are you doing? You know, mm-hmm. And
yeah. So what happens is they end up going into space dock, and really, you know, it's a story of it's a couple of interesting things, because when you really realize that you know, when Sarek shows up, mm-hmm. which is Spock's father, right. And he's really kind of pissed off at the captain, and he says, "I'll speak with you alone," and so everybody leaves. And he says, you know, "I would have gone to Vulcan, you know, and give you my," and he's like, you know, "spare me your human
platitudes."
Yeah. Platitudes. Thank you. I was going to say crap, but I'll say platitudes.
Get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. They changed it in the script. Originally it was crap. but so it's not that he's upset about. He's upset because he left Spock's body in Genesis planet.
Right.
And that really was because the Vulcans have their katra, their spirit is, you know, it's detachable, kind of like we are, right? We're all spiritual beings, or at least that's my faith. And, you know, so if you have a spiritual entity that's somewhere out there, and the body can be somehow connected or at least brought to somewhere, and we don't know why. So Kirk is kind of confused at this point. He's like, right. He said, you know, you destroyed his future, and he's like, "I really saw no future." You know, he's exactly. gone. He doesn't understand. And then that's when he explains to him. And then Sarek asks Kirk, right, if he can actually do the
mind meld with
the captain. And then.
Yeah, because the concept was, and again, a lot of this section was kind of new for the Star Trek as far as the Vulcan way. So right. He thought that because Kirk was the last person to be with Spock, that Spock would have mind melded with Kirk and transferred his katra into Kirk. So when he mind melded with him, he realized that Kirk's mind did not contain right. the katra. Right. It pretty much contained like naked green women and stuff like that. But it really... But you know, other than that, yeah. But other than that, like it was.
what are you doing? Put her down.
No, but I mean, and that's what he thought. But then Kirk makes the connection. Wait a minute, there's somebody else who's going crazy or having some problems, and this is where he starts to connect the fact that actually Spock had mind melded with McCoy.
Right, and this is where it gets a little bit for me, anyway, story wise. Because Kirk is so maybe he was hurt because he was obviously he's been, you know, there's a scene when they're on the Enterprise when they're coming back to space dock, and he leaves the Enterprise or he leaves the bridge and he gets in the elevator, right?
Right.
Or in the lift, and he kind of like turns over and he kind of goes, you see him slumping like in pain, losing his friend, because that cadet was like, "Are there going to be awards? Are we going to have a parade?" And you know, Uhura looks at him like, "You shut your mouth. We just brought Spock."
I'm sorry, but if you just one thing, do you think when you go to the very beginning of the movie, he actually says, when he's saying the captain's log, he says, "I feel uneasy,"
right?
"And I wonder why,"
right?
So he's feeling something. He's feeling that there's something not right, and I think he kind of carries that through the whole piece. And then sure enough, things start showing up. McCoy's issue starts showing up. All these things start happening. Sarek shows up. So all these things are feeding his paranoia about something.
And what I was thinking was, like, you know, when he was explaining to him about the katra that he would have transferred. Well, I guess he didn't really pick up on McCoy having that incident where he heard Spock's voice and stuff. He just thought that Spock, maybe McCoy was going through certain things. But when he had to relive right. it again, because he, you know, with the whole mind meld thing, and that was really painful. And you could see in Kirk's yes. face that he's like, no, you know. And then he realized, he tells him, you know, we were separated. We couldn't. So then he says, all that he was is gone, you know, right. And you know, all who he was and will never be again. And then that's when Kirk, when he comes sort of to present time again, and he kind of then says, no, wait a minute. Spock would have figured out a way, because this is what Spock does, right? He finds exactly. a way. It's a logical way. He knows he's going to go into a radiation place that he's not going to come out of.
Mm-hmm.
Just not going to happen. He knows right. this going in. He has to save the ship, right? So when he mind melds with McCoy, we kind of like missed that, or at least didn't understand what the significance of that was for the next film, right? But finally, when Kirk goes back to the play tapes and he takes out the VHS tape of that movie and he puts it in and he sees scenes from that movie, then he sees that.
and he's actually watching a scene from the movie, you can tell. Betamax.
I know, he's like. Fast so forward. Then he's a spot, you know, he spots Spock basically mind melding with McCoy and saying, remember. And that when he realizes it's McCoy.
Right.
McCoy has the contra. So now Kirk is like sort of like in really difficult time. Like, how is he gonna get McCoy back to a Vulcan? You know, and he has no ship. His ship is being decommissioned. There is no other. It's not like you can just hop on any starship, right? There was right. that other new one that they're making, the Excelsior, right? So it was one of those things where he has to figure out a way to do it. And to Kurt's, you know, Kurt usually tries to do things by the book. But as you know, as we know, one part of the things that we love about Kirk is that he does things because they're the right thing to do, and not necessarily because it's the Federation way, or if it's the right. It's always the ethical thing to do, the moral thing to do,
right.
not the legal right, but it's always the moral thing. And so he does try, and he goes to his superior officer, right, and he's asking him. He wants to take the Enterprise, you know, and guys, absolutely not. You're one of my best officers, but there's no way. He moved me quite a lot in that scene. I wouldn't let you do that, you know. And frankly, this whole Vulcan mysticism, I've never quite understood it. You don't need to understand it. I'm not sure I do. So they have their little whole dialogue, and and he tells him no. And there's a funny moment, I think you probably can appreciate it, when you realize Kurt is trying to figure out, how else can I do this?
Right. He's looking this way.
He's looking away. He's like, blah, blah, blah.
And the wheels
are
turning.
And he's thinking, how else can I do
this? Yeah. He's like, okay, you know.
And then he kind of turns to him and he goes, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. I had to try, you know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Kirk knew that he was not going to get anywhere that way. He knew.
But it was kind of cool that he tried.
That he tried, yes. And later on, he could say, listen, I asked, and you guys didn't give it to me.
Look what happened.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so I'm going, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is where we start to see Kirk kind of take over the situation. And this is where we got to see again, talking about, you know, like the previous episode when we talked about a mock time where Kirk decided to disobey Starfleet's orders and take Spock to his planet. Well, now he's doing this again. And he's saying, well, if they're not going to give me the Enterprise, I'm going to take it. And I'm going to go now, completely not knowing what he's going to find. Because we don't know what condition Spock is in. We don't even know if Spock is there or not, or what's going on. But we're going to go anyway.
Right.
Right.
And you said it was perfect. Like he said, he took over the situation. And I think it was the reason he was sort of broken before that. When he found out that there was a possibility, or at least that he had to do it for his friend, that there was some unleft business that he had to, that he, knowing that Spock has given his life over, you know, a bunch of times for Kirk, that's where he kind of took over. And that's where he sort of like rose to the occasion, as he always does. Yes. And decided, you know what, I'm going to take, I'm going to do this. And I love when he's walking in, he says, he goes, what did he say? He said, no, that's why I'm going anyway.
Going anyway. And that's vintage Kirk. I'm going to do this no matter what. And he sets the plan in motion. And the neat thing is now it's in, you know, Kirk realizes he can't just do this alone. You have this group now who are all doing their parts to go with them. And there's no question. They're not even questioning. Like Sulu tells them, you know, you can count on our help, sir. We're going to do this no matter what. And even when they get into the Enterprise and he says, Dr. McCoy and I have to do this. The rest of you don't have to do this.
Right.
And they're like, let's go. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're wasting time, Captain.
Exactly.
So he gives them the alternative, you know, the ultimatum, I guess, or the alternative to not do it or to do it. And there was no hesitation in any of them, you know, and of course you would know that there wouldn't be, but it's just good to see, you know. Mm-hmm. I think probably the only one that was hesitant was McCoy. Yeah. He's like the only one that's like, I don't want to freaking go down there.
That's so true.
And he's, when he finds out what happened, he was like, that green blooded funk.
yeah. It's his revenge for all those arguments he lost.
Yeah, for all those arguments he lost. I love that. When I first saw that, I was just cracking up. But the love that, you know, at the end, obviously the love that they all have for each other was great. And of course, they have, they're trying to get out of space dock now, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, you know, we don't want to give away the whole movie if you haven't watched it, if you're just watching this. Because you like what we're doing, and we don't want to give away the whole movie, but it is a great, great film. So we'll stop talking at this juncture too much about giving away stuff, but I do want to talk more about the actual film in relation to some of the actors that were in it. Now, Christopher Lloyd played
Commander Krug.
Yeah, Krug. And he was great. He was fantastic. And, you know, and it was 1984. The following year, 1985, Back to the Future comes out. And Christopher Lloyd is playing Doc, right?
Right.
Hey, Doc, I mean, are you telling me you built a, you know, DeLorean, you know, and that whole thing happened. And so when I watch Star Trek, you know, this is a thing that I do have a little bit of a problem sometimes. Getting him to be just that evil guy, even though he was fantastic, he was great.
Yes.
And
yes.
But every once in a while, the voice, because I'm such a huge Michael J. Fox fan in first, and then Back to the Future films, I've seen them all with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they love it. And even here in the house, I'm like, run for it, Marty. You know, always messy, and they all know who it is. So I'm a huge fan of that. So when you go back and you watch it, I even forgot, to be honest. Like, I blocked it out. I watched it again. I was like, oh, that's right. He's in this. You know, I was like, you know, and he was fantastic. You know, it was a great performance. But
he was.
What a career, right? He leaves Taxi.
He was in Taxi. I mean, even like you said, when I watched Taxi, which those of you who are not around, is an older sitcom that he was on, that he was, and he was like, oh, you know. even when I watched that, but it's true. I cannot see him now. Without comparing him to Star Trek and comparing him to, you know, all these things that he was in.
Yeah. But it's an amazing range to do because think about it. You know, he's got this drug-induced guy, Jimmy Natowski. He's got this evil Klingon guy. And then he's got Doc. You know, I mean, you talk about what versatility, you know, of an actor he is. And with that voice,
yes,
because his voice is very, very distinctive.
Very distinct voice, absolutely. You can tell it's him anywhere.
Yeah, and still to be able to pull it off, it's very, very impressive. It is a little bit. We talked about Khan, you know, Ricardo Montalban. It's the same kind of thing, you know, where Ricardo's doing family, you know, Fantasy Island. I was going to say Family Ties.
Where he's doing Fantasy Alex. Island.
Alex,
I grow fatigued.
Alex B. Keaton. for Fantasy Island, and then right after that, boom, he's just Klingon, you know, and you know, he's playing again, reprising this role, and so again, just great performances, and I think that carries through in Star Trek. And, you know, we're George and I have been brainstorming on what type of episodes to put together. And one of the episodes that we want to do, we want to kind of like talk about the two captains, like two pin two captains together, not who is better or anything, but just talk about them. And maybe we can even have a poll on what right. people think. And, right. and, we also want to do the villains, you know, like yes. with all these villains and these actors that have played these villains. For me, there's so many in Deep Space Nine that came through, you know, that we're going to cover later on. Once we, there's so much stuff to cover.
There's so many infinite combinations yeah. we can do with yeah, Star Trek. It's ridiculous.
Probably when the Star Trek film comes out in June of 2023, we'll cover yeah. Deep Space Nine.
Exactly. By the way, just as an aside, Christopher Lloyd almost didn't get this job.
Wow.
In Search for Spock, the leading runner up for this job was an actor named Edward James Olmos, who read for the script three times. And what ended up happening was that he was very good. Apparently Leonard Nimoy really liked him. And then out of nowhere comes what's his name? Christopher Lloyd. And just reads and completely blew it away. And all of a sudden they say, you know, the story goes that Leonard Nimoy and the producers or whatever just fell in love with how he did it. Maybe part yeah. of it was his voice too. I don't know, yeah. but gave him the job yeah. just like that. Yeah. He just came in like last minute and boom, he was done. And he didn't really know that much about Star Trek. He knew a little bit, but yeah. I mean, what a job he did.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes that does help, I think, for the actor, mm-hmm. maybe not for the director. I think the director should be engrossed in that world a little bit and know the characters, but for an actor to come in, because an actor doesn't know who Kirk is, right? You know, the character doesn't know who Kirk is, right?
Right.
And, or doesn't know who this, you know, he's coming in fresh. Right. So not only does he not know as an actor, as a person out of a character too much, but even in the character, you probably won't know that much either, you know, unless you're playing a very close friend or something. But I think that does help sometimes when you're talking mm-hmm. about casting someone who knows nothing about Star Trek. I think it helps the show a little bit.
Yeah, know? I never thought about it that way, because I always thought that if you cast somebody, and again, this is from a layman's point of view, but I always thought that when you cast somebody for something like this, you would have to know everything there is to know.
Yeah.
You know, but right. I guess that makes sense also, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends also because what you're doing. If you're doing if you have the role, then you might want to do a little research on it, you know, but it's a different because it's such a huge world, you know, right. and even though this was already, there was only three films in, he would have been in the third film in plus mm-hmm. plus the series. And I think Next Generation started in much later, right?
Next Generation started in late '80s.
So it's still, this was really the only body of work that he had to go by, you right. know, so there wasn't a great deal of watching it. I had I'm an actor, everyone, in case anybody wants. But I auditioned for Gotham about 2 years ago it was 2019. And I went in and I did great, by the way. They really loved me. I didn't get the role, but what was that?
Penguin?
Yeah, no. I wish, man. No, it was a featured role, but it was only like a one episode thing.
Okay.
But you know, when I was going to audition, my agent called me and said, what I did was I went out and I went onto YouTube, and there's a guy that does the whole season. He does like a synopsis of the whole season 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So I watched all his videos. So by the time I walked in, I kind of knew the world because I'd never really watched Gotham. I don't even have television, to be honest. I only have streaming services, so I don't watch a lot of I don't watch any TV, but it did help me, you know. So it depends on what approach an actor wants to take
with okay
people, you know. But okay. I do love the fact that he walked in and just blew it out of the water. And yeah. I know it had to do with his performance, because I know Edward James Olmos is a great actor, you mm-hmm. know, but he's a much more subtle actor,
right.
And you know, Christopher Lloyd is much more over the top.
Right, exactly.
And he's up here, and he's yes. playing this crazy Vulcan, and he right. wants to destroy. And you know, he just has that presence. And even with the characters, when you look at the doc, you know,
yes.
you know, Marty, I just thought, you know, it's like all that is very, very energetic. So I'm sure that that's what happened. He came in and he just delivered those lines and it was just like, boom, that's the guy. And that happens a lot.
Sometimes it happens, right? Yeah, Homeworld. I would think so.
It's crazy. But he was really great. And another tragedy, in the, well, I guess, the show, you know, this is, if you're watching this show, you're probably, we're probably going to spoil the film for you. If you have not seen this film, that's like, what, 40 years old? Or something.
Yeah. Or what you can do is watch the, you know, turn, you know, stop this, and because you could always look at what, you know, finish this later, watch That's the good. Film and then come back and listen come to us back. Again.
We'll be here. We'll wait.
Exactly.
So, but no, but you know, he ends up getting his friend back, but he ends up losing his son. And yes. You know,
The amount of loss
I know I was gonna say
that he cursed. Experienced in this movie, man. Oh. And here's what I think. This, to me, just some opinions on it. This was the most vulnerable you see Captain Kirk.
Yes, and that's why I wanted vulnerable. To bring up when he went into the elevator after he's leaving, because he's trying to, you know, he's telling the guy, the kid is saying, you know, are we gonna get a party? He says, Lord knows we should, right? We paid for it with our blood, you know, with right. our blood or something, right? And he exactly. gets to the thing and he slumps over. Like, I mean, he is so suffering, yes. you know, yes. he's so confused. He's doesn't know where to go from here. The ship is almost like meaningless to him, you know, which is probably another metaphor for blowing it up.
Yeah, well, exactly. And he's empty inside. He even says the Enterprise is like a house with all the children gone.
Right.
And if you think about it, like, you know, you and I are parents, mm-hmm. right? At some point, our kids are going to go on their own and we're going to be empty nesters. Oh, my God. Just thinking about it. And I mean, literally, mine cannot.
I'm an older man and I have young kids. So by the time that happens, I'll be senile. So I don't know.
It's already been in diapers. You'll What's be in diapers fun? And all that, so it's okay.
Yeah. I have a son. He's going to college. What?
Anyway, we will still be doing the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very sure.
But I have a daughter who cannot wait to run out of this house and just. I mean, listen. She loves her parents. We love her. We have a great relationship. But she wants to be an adult.
There's a world to conquer, you know.
Yeah, she wants to travel. She wants to, you know, be on her own. But, you know, with that thing in mind, when she does go, there's gonna be an emptiness in me.
Oh man,
you know, there's gonna be like the room is gonna be empty, and you know, she's not here, and you know, and I mean, now in it's two different things because obviously he lost a friend and who tragically, you know, but you still have that feeling of emptiness, and that's what he had there.
Yeah.
You know,
he
was very broken, like you said. Yeah. And then compound that as the movie goes on, more loss and more loss. And how about the scene where he breaks down about his son?
Mm-hmm. He falls over on a chair.
He falls on the chair and he
misses the chair. He goes to sit and misses the chair and just falls.
And completely breaks down. I mean, that's every time I see that scene,
it gets you.
It waters me up.
It does. Yeah.
I thought he did brilliantly in that scene.
Yeah,
he was so too. Vulnerable. There, he was not the invincible Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
You know. So I thought it was fantastic.
It was really good, and he does project that so beautifully. And one of the things that I love also is that this is what makes a great captain, that you can be that vulnerable. And then the next second, you know that right. you have to get your act together because there are other people that are relying on you, you know, and they're going to die too if right. you don't actually come out of it and just rise above that pain, right? And exactly. that's what he does, you know, when he gets up.
He gets up and he's
like, all right. He's all right, like, all right, damn. Right. And then he's like, and he, you know, he decides to make the ultimate sacrifice, another ultimate sacrifice.
Right.
To destroy the ship that he's loved for so many years. And you know, when you first watch that scene, I don't know about you, but I remember thinking like, are they gonna, is it like, I just thought like maybe they would stop it or something would happen, but it's gone.
The writing on this was brilliant because because all around from that point forward, the decisions that Captain Kirk has to make, and in order just to save everyone, and because you're thinking about it, like I'm thinking about the situation, I'm going, how am I, would I get out of this situation? I mean, think about, how would you get, would I even think about doing this, you know? And he just makes it, but again, that's what makes him amazing, right?
Yeah, he said, look, they're going to come on here, take my ship, and then we're going to beam down to the planet. It's our only hope. See, that's, and then, you know, when he's looking up, right, when they're all looking up and they see the ship in the sky and it's, you know, burning up across the sky, and he says, Bones, my God, what have I done? Right. And then Bones tells him, he goes, what you always do, you know, giving us a fighting chance to live another day, you know, to keep living. Exactly. And that's what he does. You know, that's why he is who he is, because he gives himself that chance. And within that chance, something is, there's hope. And I think that actually goes a lot through life too. Right. Like when you get into these moments of like the workaday world and you're stressed, but if you just give yourself the chance to just go another day, take a deep breath, and just confront something, you know, whatever is actually troubling you, you can keep going, you can rise above, and you can break through those barriers. But you have to give yourself the opportunity to take a deep breath and figure things out quickly. And you know, life is, you don't learn this in school. Right? You don't learn how to be responsible in school. You don't learn a lot of things in school. And this is something that you learn by becoming a leader, by, you know, understanding that you're not the only one that's hurting. There are other people. You need to be stronger for other people around you. And that is Captain Kirk in a nutshell, you know, and that's
exactly. And I think what separates people like him, you know, and again, looking at it in life, people that are able to, I mean, you look at the stories. Look at stories of people who have beaten the odds on situations, whether it's a health condition, like cancer, some kind of disability, you know, whatever it is. Think about what they went through to break through these barriers. Right? They had to have that same mentality that he had at that moment. Okay, because again, like I was saying, oh my God, what would I do in this situation? Well, I'm gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to figure out how to save everyone and how to get out of this situation alive and live to fight another day. And, you know, these are lessons that I teach my daughter now too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, you know, when when we talk about problems, everybody has problems, right? And I tell her, listen, your job is not to say, you know, oh my God, why? Your job is to say, okay, how can I?
Right.
Do this? How can I figure this out? What are my choices? How can I change this? You know, because I don't want her to come from that victim mentality. I want her to come from that, you know, I'm going to take the situation over. I'm going to be at cause on the situation. Right. And that's what he was.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think people also want to not have problems. Like like, I want to get rid of problems. And you start thinking to yourself, that's not reality.
No, it's
life
not.
Is, you know, there's always going to be a conflict. There's always going to be, you know, a problem is basically two forces against each other. One wants to go this way. One wants to go that way. That's what a problem is. That's the definition of a problem, right? It's a counteraction against itself. And that's what life is. You have to, the body, you have to eat.
Right.
That's a bit of a conflict. What are you going to eat? How are you going to eat? Are you going to work out? Are you going to, all these things are conflicts and they're problems. But when you have a strong spiritual will and a strong spiritual connection to the people around you that you want them to survive, you know, that's what really lifts him up. And that's why he decides to do what he did. And he gives the code, Scotty does, and then Chekhov gives the code, and they have 60 seconds. They run off to the transporter. They beam down as the Klingons are beaming onto the ship. They go onto the bridge, and he's like, you know, it's abandoned, my lord. And he's like, it's impossible. They're hiding. And then he says, all we hear is a machine here talking. He goes, let me hear it. Five,
like, nine, four, four, three.
Get out. Get out. He starts yelling to get out. And of course, it's too late, and the ship is blown up, and he loses pretty much his whole crew. So then at that point, it's only one guy that's on the surface, right? Actually, it was two guys on the surface, and Spock threw one guy,
killed one guy, right?
Yeah, and then there was one guy. So when they showed up, they took care of that one guy, and then there was only one guy on the ship, mm-hmm. right? On the ship above when they beamed everybody up.
That was John Larroquette.
It was it really?
John Larroquette, yeah.
That I did not know. That is hilarious. Night Court.
Yeah.
John Larroquette was awesome.
I love him.
Oh, I love him. And he was in Stripes. He was so good in Stripes.
Oh. Classic. I wanted to ask you something from more of the director, producer, director side of things, or the writer side of things, or whatever the case may be. So now we have Kirk and Krug on the planet, right? Everybody's gone. Everybody's been beamed up now. And Krug wants Genesis, and he's talking to him. And now they're going to do battle, those two, on the planet by themselves, right? Planet is exploding. This is something interesting. This is something I've always thought about watching this movie. Every movie, most movies now, when you watch them and there's this big climactic fight scene, there's always pumping music in the background, and there's, this and hits and that and all these things.
Marvel movie.
Here you don't see that.
No,
it's literally silent. Okay. Yeah. And all you hear is the explosions. This is what I'm thinking. And I'm wondering if you think I'm on the right track, or maybe you can tell me, my thoughts, if I'm on the right track. I'm thinking that they did that purposely because there was so much going on. They wanted to bring the audience like they were actually there, hearing the explosions, like if you were actually on the planet in between these two guys,
right,
and listening to the explosions. And maybe the music would have taken away from that.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, but
I thought of that too. Yeah. Cause okay. I think you're right. I think one of the reasons is because, the music is always fun. It's like a Marvel movie, music at the end, they're fighting, right, and stuff like that. Or any other, most films, they have some kind of, whatever it is. Right. It does bring you into the adventure of it,
right,
but not the seriousness of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the seriousness, that's what they wanted to bring out, was the seriousness of this situation. Here is Spock, who's basically an empty shell laying there, and he's trying to tell the guy, beam him up. He wants to give Spock a living chance, a chance. Right. At least if he's up there, there's some chance, and he doesn't, he refuses. But then you have to think about, and then with everything exploding and the whole planet, you do kind of feel like this desperation, like, get out of there, because you're really immersed in that scene.
Exactly.
There is no music to kind of cue you on where things are going. You don't know what's happening. Fire is coming up here. And then finally this huge rock shoots up into the sky, and it hits the Krug, whatever his name is.
Krug, and it throws him on top of Kirk.
On top of Kirk, So again, Kirk gets that break,
right?
Gets that break because he's mad. He continues to cheat death, right?
Right.
He continues to kind of like to do things for the greater good of someone else. And when you do that, good things happen to you. And that rock was really his opportunity, even though he's much stronger than Kirk, and he kind of gives him a beating. He was really, Kirk was like fighting for his life, basically, obviously. Right. But there was that planet that was sort of almost helping Kirk in a sense, because you have to understand that Genesis is a living planet that Spock is sort of connected to in a sense.
That's right.
It was his son that just died there.
Right.
And his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend was one of the scientists, and all these things together are part of something that really, you think about energy and you think of that kind of connection. There was a connection there between him and
you're absolutely right.
And then the ground breaks and he falls, right? And of course, Kirk being Kirk, he wants to save him.
Right.
Give him your hand. He grabs his leg to pull him down. And Kirk is like, for the love of God. And he's like, I have grown tired
of you. And this is where the actual, finally, the music, and it's almost
finally
like
the music hits when
the music hits. But it's almost like a release.
It is.
Because
it is.
The music comes finally, and he finally knocks this guy off the cliff, and it's like we got rid of this guy.
But then if you notice, right, shortly right after, it gets dire again, because now he has to figure out how to get onto the ship.
Right.
So exactly. Then he has to pick up Spock. Mm-hmm. And you know, he yells into the thing, "Gosh, God, whatever he says."
I think you just said my laundry is done.
I think I just said pork fry right in chicken wings, please. But then you know, he grabbed the thing, and the guy up on top thought that it was the commander, and he beams him up, and then he has the gun there, and obviously he's overpowered. It was only one guy up there, so he's overpowered by all the guys anyway. It's funny how Klingons always would rather die than to be shamed. That's like part of their thing, right? It's part of they want to, and it started early on, by the way. I mean, if you mm-hmm. looked at one of the episodes that we covered early on, which I can't remember which one it was. Actually, no, we didn't cover that episode. I saw it by accident. It was the one where they went onto this planet and they were trying to save the planet because the Klingons were coming, but they were like, "We're under no danger, Captain." But there was a Klingon in there, and they looked different. They kind of similar, but they were not as evolved as these Klingons. But he says to fight Kirk to the death. He said it would have been glorious. Yeah, you know, that's like part of that. That started that whole thing with the Klingons, where they would prefer to fight in battle and die and for the honor and all that. And
this is where you see this in the movie. there's a scene where he says where they were about to board the Enterprise, right before he boards the Enterprise, he says, "Take every last man and form a boarding party armed heavily." Right. So the guy looks at him like, "But they outnumber us." And what does he say? We are Klingons. Right. This is where they really hone in on that warrior mentality. So right there, he's saying, "We are Klingons. It doesn't matter how many people there are. Right. We're going to fight them, and we're going to fight them, you know, and be glorious in the battle." Right.
Exactly. And there's that scene also where he got the some of the information from Genesis mm-hmm. on the and he asked the girl that was on the other ship. Remember, she said, "I think you'll find the information useful."
Right.
So you saw it.
So you saw it. Yeah.
And he's like, "Yes." She goes, "How unfortunate."
Unfortunate.
Unfortunate. And she's like, "I understand." So she's willing to die.
She knew right there. She was
a goner. You know, I was like, "Damn, that's hardcore."
Tough love.
Talk about tough love. Definitely, definitely. Cool. All right. So we're almost approaching at the end. I can't believe it. It's like 52 minutes.
Wow. I want to just really quick. So just give a little bit of history as far as the movie itself, when it came out, if I could. We're just going to talk about the...
This was 1984, huh?
The movie came out on June 1st, 1984. Okay. And I'm just going to do the top 10 movies that were out at that time, what it had to compete with. Now, Star Trek, when it came out that weekend, it grossed, it was 16 million or almost 17 million, which was at that time a lot for a movie in a weekend, but it was number one.
You can't make a short film now with that.
Yeah, exactly. But the other movies that it competed with at number two was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
How about that? Okay. Number three was The Natural, one of my favorite movies. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah, great.
If you guys like baseball, you ever want to see a great baseball movie, watch that one.
That's great.
Number four, this might be dear to your heart, John. Breakin'.
Was that like number four on the list?
That was number
that
four
was like
on
one
the
of
list.
The worst films ever. It was like so bad.
I remember, breakdancing was huge at that time. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I remember watching that at the Art Theater in the South Bronx on Southern Boulevard.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Number five was Streets of Fire, which I'm not exactly sure what it is. Number six was Once Upon a Time in America.
Hmm.
Okay, good movie. Yeah. Number seven was Romancing the Stone. That's Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, if I remember correctly.
Directed by, I believe, Danny DeVito, as a matter of
fact. Ah, yes, that's right. Right. Number eight, classic Police Academy.
Oh, wait, the first one?
The first one.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the cool, first one. Number nine, for the teens out there, 16 Candles.
Wow, 16 Candles. Man, that was a classic.
Classic.
Molly Ringwald.
Yes, Molly Ringwald. And number 10 was Footloose.
Ah, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Footloose.
Kenny Loggins. Classic.
Yes. Yep. Love so it. Those were the top 10 movies at the time that Trek had to compete with.
Wow. So that's a really competitive list there. Yes. Just Indiana Jones alone, that was such a phenomenon. It was a pretty intense. Awesome. Cool. So, folks, we're going to be wrapping up. We're just going to do the trivia question. And, George, the answer is 4. What are we doing, math? I'm sorry, well, 0.4.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Now it's right.
So, no, it was actually which
cast member
directed the
most episode, or holds the record for the most episodes directed. So, John, what do you think?
It's got to be somebody in the Next Generation. That's my view. I'm going to pick somebody like, I'm going to say Riker.
Do you mean Jonathan Frakes?
Jonathan Frakes, yeah.
You know, it's funny, when I actually thought about this question, that was the first person I thought you were going to say.
Are you serious?
I said, he's going to say Riker. Now, Jonathan Frakes did direct episodes.
He did direct a lot of them.
But he did not direct as many as this person I'm going to talk about.
All right. So nobody has any input. I have no idea.
So the answer is LeVar Burton.
Oh, damn it. That was the first person I was thinking of.
Should have went with your first instinct.
I was thinking LeVar Burton, and I thought, because I know he directed a lot too, and yes, he is a director.
So now the interesting thing is that LeVar Burton obviously was on Next Generation, but he only directed two of those.
Oh.
Okay. So most of his directing came with, he directed 10 episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, okay. I know he did a few of those.
8 episodes of Voyager and 9 episodes of Enterprise. Damn, so altogether, he directed 28 total episodes.
Good for him. Wow. Yeah, he's awesome. I always liked him.
Yep.
Every time I see him, I think of the same thing. Butterfly in the sky.
By the way, do you know that there is a huge push for him to host Jeopardy?
Oh, Jeopardy?
Yeah, there was actually a huge fan petition that came out, like millions of people, was including now. I have no idea, but he's actually, he in his Twitter, I think he said he tweeted it out, so it looks like he would be interested. And I could see him doing it, but because he's a very smart guy.
He is.
But there was such a huge push for some reason for him, and then like even actors started like saying, yeah, he should do it, definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can totally see him doing that. You know, because it's one of those gigs that's a little bit different than like Family Feud.
Right, right.
You know, where you can have more fun, where this guy, what's his name? The guy that's on Family Feud now,
Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey, who I love, Steve Harvey. And his story, by the way, talk about perseverance and spiritual push. If you ever want to really be like, wow, watch his story. But Jeopardy is a little bit different. So I think LeVar would be fantastic for that.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
That's a good deal. Good deal. Okay, so there's your answer for trivia. Cool. Awesome. All right. I'm out of breath.
You're right there, buddy.
Yeah, so much Star Trek. It's amazing. I love it. Such a great episode. If you do get a chance, anybody out there, please check it out. Search for Spock. And next week, George and I have decided that we're going to stick with the movies for a little bit. Just
Porky's.
We're going to do Porky's and then Return of Porky's. That's going to be great. That's going to be a great series. So stay tuned for that one. I thought William Shatner was fantastic in Porky's 4. So we're going to be doing Star Trek 4, which was, I guess, called The Voyage Home.
Or the one with the whales.
Right. they were going to go with the name, the one with the whales, but they decided to go with The Voyage Home.
Right.
So next week we're going to be covering that one, which I really love because it's a little bit has a little more humor in it. Spock is back with the captain. It's the first time that they're really back again since a while, right? And it's just great to see them all again. And then the whole time travel energy to it. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. So we're going to be having a lot of fun watching that next week and discussing it. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Please remember, if you like this, please like, subscribe, and share it with people that you think will like Star Trek, or maybe they might just get into it because of this show. Who knows? But I want to thank everybody for tuning in. George, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm here, sir.
For doing this. It's a lot of fun. And we will all see you again next week, which will be whatever date it is. It's on Tuesday, next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another episode of Counterparts. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week ahead. God bless you all. Take care. And as always,
peace.